Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Minority Report's podcast and digital series. I am your host, Mona Shake. It's Thursday, Throwback Thursday. I posted a picture of myself when I had super short hair and I was like 25 years old. And I swear to God, when I was in my 20s, I would get audition roles for women in their 40s. When I'm in my 30s, I get roles auditioned for women in their 50s. So basically, I should have started acting when I was an embryo, because that would be the appropriate age for Hollywood. Anywho, with me today is a very special guest that I'm very excited about. She is a licensed psychotherapist and board-certified coach for millennials / Gen Zers, and named the Millennial Therapist by CNBC's Make It. Here's my wonderful guest, Tess Brigham. How are you?
Hi.
Nice to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, absolutely. Happy to be here.
This is all very exciting. Tess, I got to ask this question right up top. Do psychotherapists go see other psychotherapists?
Yes. Yeah. It's a big part of the process. In some graduate school programs, they'll require you while you're in graduate school to go and get your own individual therapy, because when you're a therapist, a lot, you know, things come up, right? You meet people, they might trigger you, they remind you of someone that bothers you, and you really have to be able to move all that, leave that on the other side and help them. So usually people have had some sort of experience in therapy. Yeah. Before they become a therapist, because it impacted them in some way, shape, or form. They found it incredibly helpful. And so a lot of times, you know, people are familiar with it, but yeah, it's important. And I'm not in therapy right now, but I continue to do work on myself at all times. You know, I have coaches that I work with. I mean, I'm from Berkeley, California, so I do a lot of woo-woo stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not a woo-woo kind of therapist, but I do a lot of the woo-woo stuff, and so I'm always looking and doing different things that will help me get better.
Yeah.
With myself, because, you know, you are as good as you. I'm sure you feel this too, right? If you don't feel good about you, if you don't feel confident and strong and focused, how do you get up and do your job?
That's correct. That's 100%. Tess, how long have you been a psychotherapist for? And did you grow up in a family or an environment where you felt the need to become a therapist as a way of helping yourself and people around you?
So I've been working with people for over 15 years. So I started off as a therapist first, and then I became a coach. But I don't know, both my father and sister are attorneys. So when you say, you know, helping myself, no, not really. You know, I don't think it was so much that. I think I was a very, always, I remember my seventh grade English teacher told me I was really intuitive. You know, uh-huh. She sort of recognized something in me then. So yeah. I think I've always had that, and people always told me, you know, yeah, you're really good at this. But the evolution of how I got here is it had very little to do with my family and all that. I'm very lucky. I have a very healthy family.
That's lovely. You know, Jess, I think I've been going to therapy for 13 years, almost 14 years now. Mm-hmm. I'm a big advocate of mental health. I'm a big advocate of people going to therapy and taking care of their mental health, which I think is the number one issue really around the world. It's so underestimated, the power of mental health and like the impact of mental health. I think it's so under the radar. I mean, just in America, it's only recently that this conversation about mental health has really become mainstream, because it has been such a taboo that's been attached to it. I think for the longest time, you went to a therapist because it was fancy or you had money. But now it's like, no, these are actual problems. Like, people suffer from personality disorders, you know, mental disorders. They have, you know, chemical imbalances, and those things need to be addressed and they need to be managed. So I guess my question to you is just, why this, your focus, or I guess CNBC labeled you as the psychotherapist for millennial and Gen Zers. How different are their problems versus someone who is not of that generation?
Yeah. So, and I know that there are lots of millennials and Gen Zers out there that don't like that label. And so I usually say it's, you know, young professionals, young adults, you know, at the first stages of their lives. And, you know, listen, across the board, everybody, in an ideal world, we would all have a therapist and a coach, maybe not at the same time and not always, but everyone should have an ability to stop and say, okay, I got to talk to someone. I got to figure something out. And so, yeah, across the board, no matter what your age is, you absolutely, I believe in it. And I think that it's important. I work with young people, they kind of found me. And what I realized about 10 years ago, I opened up a therapy practice in San Francisco Bay Area. It's in downtown San Francisco. And what happened was young adults started showing up, you know, and these millennials that I'd heard all about. And I was like, wait a minute, they're not entitled. They're not lazy. They're none of these things that really what was happening was, you know, as a young person, people think that you learn everything you need to learn about life from high school and maybe college. And so suddenly at 22 or 18 or whenever you enter the workforce, you're expected to know everything, know exactly what you want to do, know how to be in the world, know, you know, all of these things. And there's this attitude that, you know, your 20s are about figuring, you know, you got to figure out your job, your love life, where you're going to live, how you're going to be. You got to do all of this by 30 or something terrible will happen. And what I found was a lot of young people coming to me saying, you know, I don't have it figured out. How do I do this? What's wrong with me? Everyone else has it figured out. There's something that I'm doing wrong. And I saw that there was this great need for someone to help young people who are just really trying to figure out who they are. And this is something everybody goes through. I went through it. You know, everybody in their early 20s and into late 20s, they are all trying to figure out, right? We're trying to figure out who we are as a person. We biologically, our brain doesn't stop growing until we're 25. We biologically are still growing at that age. So that's the important piece for people to recognize is that your job is not to figure it all out. Your job is not to know everything. Yeah. So that's why, you know, that's why it is so important for young people to have this help, to have the guidance and help, because it is such a confusing time in your life.
You know, Tess, I'm always fascinated by the fact that who came up with the fact that 18 should be the legal age? If your brain hasn't even freaking fully developed until 25, then who the fuck came up with 18?
I don't know. I mean, all of them are like 16 to drive, 18 to vote, 21 to drink, right? There are all these arbitrary things. And then 25 to rent a car.
which is you're just like, okay, 25 to rent a car. So shouldn't we start from that? Shouldn't 25 be the legal age? And then everything else is you're just growing at that, you know, I mean, yeah. I don't know about you, Tess. I mean, I come from a very chaotic family, right? You said that you come from a nice stable family. I did not have that experience, right? I come from a ton of chaos, a lot of violence in our house, a lot of chaos, a lot of, you know, abuse and all that. And for me at 18, I didn't know my ass from the hole in the ground. I didn't know my ass from the hole in the ground even when I hit 30. Like, because there was so much trauma to work through that you don't even know, you don't even have the self-awareness until you work through your traumas. Because it's hard, life is hard enough as it is. And then you stack on top of this, like all these traumas that you got to work through to finally figure out who you are and what you're about. I mean, when you talk to the millennials and Gen Zers, and just like you said, you know, they're not lazy, it's not that, but there's this added pressure. So I guess my question is, this kind of pressure has been along for other generations too. So how is it that this generation is struggling a lot more than the older generations?
Because we're doing it at a different time. The biggest part of it is social media, the internet, and the way things work. In 1950, you had a 90% chance that you would out-earn your parents. And now in 2010, I think, or 20, whatever, it's 50%. Wow. So there's lots of different factors. The first biggest one is the internet, that we live in an age where there is so much information. There's so much out there. We have got stuff coming at us all the time, which means that there are so many opinions, so many beliefs. And that what was happening for my clients was they would Google, you know, how do I deal with a breakup? And you would get 100 different opinions on how to deal with it. Right. And so there's so much information. Social media creates this environment for people where they feel like they constantly have to, you know, put on a show for people to make it seem like they're a lot happier than they are. Mm-hmm. And then when people go on social media, they're looking around, seeing all of their friends doing all these fun things, living these amazing lives, and thinking, okay, my life isn't that great.
Yeah.
So there's those are huge that people have to recognize are huge. And the other thing is millennials, especially, left school with a tremendous amount of school debt. They're buying home. You know, people are all like, oh, those millennials don't want to grow up. It's like, they can't. They've got so much school debt. They can't buy a house. They don't feel ready to get married. They don't feel ready to have children. That our society, that, you know, if you graduated in 1950, you know, your path was much more, it was a lot clearer. Now, it doesn't mean that people were rebelling and had, you know, wanted to figure out who they are and what they wanted and all of that. That's been happening. You know, we've always been confused by the young. Like that's how it's always been. It's just that now, especially with millennials, they were the guinea pig generation. They are the first group that did it and grew up when everyone has an ability to share their opinion to anywhere. Everyone had opinions about young people 50 years ago. They told their neighbors, they told this person or that person. Now you just go on Twitter. You just write a blog. Now I can get that opinion out to anyone in the world. And there's no barrier to, you know, no, people aren't fact checking it. People aren't thinking about it. They're not, you know, it's none of it.
Right.
So that's why millennials got such a hard time, was they were truly the first to come of age where everybody was watching them. I mean, I remember when I was in my 20s, you know, there was no social media. I would look around, everybody was poor. No one knew what they were doing. You know, we were all poor and didn't know what we were doing and lost and confused. And it was like, okay, good. I'm in the right spot. Like I wasn't doubting that part of it. And it's that. And you know, and if I was feeling low, there was nothing that I could, you know, and if I missed a party, I didn't know, but you know, you go on social media, it's happening live right there. Like, oh, I wasn't invited to this party. Oh, there must be something wrong with me. It's we don't recognize the impact of social media and the internet on brains that were not fully formed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I grew up partially in another country. I moved here. There was no internet. Like there was no anything like you're describing, like there was no social media. And I think as an adult, just like you said, I think people put on this, there's the social media life and then there's the reality of what your life actually is. And I think this whole thing, especially with the younger generation, it's just like, I'm driving a BMW and I just bought a, you know, $20,000 watch, and oh, I'm on this yacht, and I'm on this vacation, and you know, next thing you know, they're all borrowed, or they're not even yours. They're just you know, bullshitting. I think don't you think that also kind of adds this extra stress, because we didn't have Instagram or Twitter in the 50s, so you know, it was like keeping up with the Joneses. Like, if the Joneses didn't live next door to you, you didn't keep up with them because they weren't in your neighborhood. You weren't.
Well, you know, we had the Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. And that was like a weekly show that was a half hour. And they would show you these outrageous homes and someone with a gold plated sink. And you would go, ooh, and all of that. And then you would just go back to your regular life. Yeah. And so that is the thing, is that we see a lot of people out there spending money they don't have, going on vacations they don't really want to go on. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing is, I've seen where clients have told me about this, is a lot of times people end up going to gatherings and hanging out with people that they don't necessarily want to hang out with or spend time with or go to, but getting a shot there, like getting an Instagram shot and being able to post it, is like, you know, instant credibility.
Mm.
And so, and it shows, I'm showing the world, like, look, I'm having fun. Look at me. When maybe inside, like, this place is horrible. I hate these people. This is terrible.
Right.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing about social media and all the filters we've created and all of the things that go along with it, is we've allowed ourselves to create this real false reality around right. what's real and what's fake.
Right. I mean, I personally would like to blame that a lot on the reality show world. I think the reality television has really screwed up, especially, I think, feels younger people, because they are so impressionable about what their life should look like. Everybody, you know, you never heard before, not even 10 years ago, you didn't hear kids say, I want to grow up to be a YouTube star. Like, what? What kind of ambition is that? Like, oh, I want to grow up to be a TikTok star. What? That's not a career. What the hell are you talking about? Oh, no, people make millions of dollars. Yeah, that is if you, like, get there and if you make, you know, that's a ridiculous, like, a thing to say. But it's commonplace now where, you know, kids are telling that to their parents. I mean, I feel, Tess, like, I know a lot of people dig at millennials and they dig at Gen Zers. But do you also feel like, besides having, like, all this school debt and stuff, I think the mindset is also, I think the younger generation is also very much woke, where they're not like, hey, I gotta, although they like the bling and the, you know, I gotta go take pictures at this hot vacation and stuff. But there's also this sense of, how do we make the world a better place?
Oh, yeah.
Am I about bullying, being anti-bullying? I mean, it's a big part of the culture now, which is great, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing too is that we see, right, they only write about the people that are, right, going to spring break maskless. They're only writing about the, like, the people that are on OnlyFans or the TikTok stars or all that. Like, we don't really talk about the majority of young people are, you know, going to school, working every day, trying to build a life, trying to figure it out. You're absolutely right. Like, this is a whole generation of people that I think unfortunately get lumped in together as if they're all, you know, they're all doing that, but they are. And I often say, because I've gotten into many a fight with someone at a dinner party, the minute people hear what I do, they roll their eyes. The minute, if I even say young person or millennial, they're like, oh God, you know, and they want to tell me their millennial story about some millennial that upset them and all of that. And I'll fight with them about it, because I think that one thing that people forget is that millennials came into the workplace and they really sort of stopped and said, well, wait a minute, why are we doing it this way? And why should I be treated like that? And why am I working so hard if I don't get anything from it? I remember when I went into work, you know, I just sort of accepted. I accepted what people paid me. I accepted how I was treated. I was just like, oh, I just need to pay my dues and move forward and I will have success. And this was a group of people that sort of said, why? Why do I need to do that? What? There's got to be a better way. And I often say that I really credit, like, the Me Too movement, the, you know, a lot of the movements that are happening right now that should, you know, that are, should have happened decades and decades.
BLM. I mean, BLM is a big part of the conversation.
I mean, all of it. Like, these young people are the ones saying, that no, this has got to end. This has got to stop. And I do think that I'm a Generation Xer, like my generation, like above, like kind of just sort of been like, that's just how it is. And, you know, you just pay your dues and keep your mouth shut and keep going and all of that. And I'm very amazed and proud of a lot of my clients who I think the perception in the working world is, oh, that's that millennial that decided to quit. But like, they've left and said, you know, I'm going to go find myself, or I'm going to go travel, or I'm going to go do these things, because I'm not going to sit here and slave away at work and hope that it gets better.
Right.
Which is, you know, and I do, I credit them with a lot of the changes that have happened in our world for better.
Right. Right. I mean, I'm sure you remember this, but when I went to high school, there was no anti-bullying campaign. You just got freaking bullied. You just accepted it. And, you know, Chris Rock made this great joke and he goes, oh, they're going to have anti-bullying campaign. He's like, all right, good luck. You're not going to have your next astronaut. You're not going to have your next comedian. Mm-hmm. Bullies are the reason a lot of these people go out and do these incredible things, is because of bullying. And as funny as it is, I mean, it's dark, but he kind of has a point about why a lot. I mean, let's just look at Facebook alone. Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook because he started a list called Hot or Not. Like, he was not part of the hot list. Let's be fucking honest about that. Okay. And he wanted to be part. And this girl broke his heart. And he was like, I'll show her. I'm going to make this amazing thing, you know? So I don't know. I kind of look at that and it kind of makes me question, like, okay, I like the fact that they're questioning the status quo. I like the fact that they're saying, hey, why do we have to do it this way? It doesn't make everybody happy. I think, is it safe to say that the millennials and the Gen Zers are very much about experiencing life and happiness rather than wealth and showing off, oh my God, I have the biggest fucking house?
Yeah, I mean, definitely they've shown, and studies have shown, that millennials will invest more money in experiences than material wealth.
Yeah.
I don't know. The bullying thing it's funny because you're right. I think that what it is it's less about, people need grit. People need something that's going to that grittiness that Angela Duckworth in her book Grit talks about, that really, in order to reach a goal, it's not just talent and it's not just intelligence, that it's that grit and determination and doing it, that counts, you know, that counts twice. That's more important than intelligence and talent. And so I guess I wonder, like, I love Chris Rock and I get what he's saying about the bullying. I think that we can live in a non-bullying world. And I think that the idea of it is, it's not that we're going to raise a bunch of really soft kids. It's really about, and I think this was the mistake that was made at one point with education, where everyone was getting trophies and, you know, don't use red pencils and all of that. Like, that's not what helps people get motivated, right? Yeah. And bullying doesn't motivate people. You know, what motivates people.
Apparently it has, because Chris Rock was bullied and he became one of the
I know he was stand-up comic bullied. Yeah. But I guess I wonder if he wasn't bullied, but he was given, you know, tools on how to become more gritty, you know, how to, like, you know, how to persevere and do the hard things. Because everybody, you know, the thing is that everybody, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's not the only person in the world that's been dumped. Right. Right. And I think that that's the part of it, is I think that it's certain people who say, you know, I'm going to take this anger, I'm going to take this frustration, I'm going to take this and let it fuel me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was bullied. Everybody, I don't think there's anybody around who hasn't been bullied. It's not fun, you know? And I don't know. I don't know if I would, I don't know if I would want my child to be bullied just to be able to be hardened up for the world, right? Like, it's. I think the world, like you said, is hard enough.
Right. So Two Wheels Down is one of my regular viewers here, and he said, millennials invented DoorDash and Uber, slave labor jobs. And then he said, millennials are weak. Ah. Wow. Tell me how you really feel. He says, just facts. Okay. Dude, Instagram is all about showing off. TikTok, more showing off. Thoughts, Tess?
You know, again, and I'm sure there's millennials out there that are like, I mean, I don't want to be associated with being as a millennial. But, you know, yes, I don't know. Did millennials actually create both of those? It's food service, right? Like, it's always been food service. Like, there's always some food service issues. This is always how it is.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can exactly, I mean, generation after generation has been creating those things. But I hate lumping everybody together as one. I know that the perception and the belief is that millennials are, right, special snowflakes, you know, do all these things for me. And that isn't necessarily true. I think that millennials as a generation, I feel like the way in which our educational system and parenting thought about how to treat them was very different. It was, you know, the whole thing I've said about the everyone gets a trophy and don't use red pens and all of that. That was based on
participation trophies.
Yeah. And they started that, the educational system and parenting books, they started those movements because of a misinformation. It was all, you know, they realized afterwards that that was the research was wrong. So they were given this research that was told, if you just compliment people, if you give everyone a trophy, if you make everyone feel this way, then that's what will really help them and motivate them and get them excited for, you know, this is the best way to parent. And what they found was that all of that research was wrong. It was all based on, and they actually, and someone else came in and really did the research. And what we understand now about how you motivate a child, how you get someone excited, how you, right, is the grittiness, is learning to, is mindset and all of that. We understand a lot more, but we do, there are kids that were raised in that school with the idea of everybody gets the trophy. And the problem was, is that if you're raised with this idea of everyone gets a trophy, then yeah, you go off into the working world and it's, oh, wait a second, this isn't what it's like at all.
That's right.
You know, it's really, it's completely different.
It's competitive. Like you gotta bust your butt. Like you gotta get to, I have noticed, Tess, however, like, I'm a millennial, but you know, I guess the Gen Zers, I guess the generation after me. Mm-hmm. One thing I have noticed, I think maybe for me, it's also different because I also grew up in a different country. I grew up in Pakistan until I was 15. Then I moved here. So the upbringing and the mindset is very different, yeah. Right? Like, for instance, I did not like this whole thing in America about like teenagers throwing tantrums. I had never seen that shit in my life in Pakistan growing up. Never seen it. You just don't really see that kind of, I mean, if you act out, your parents will put you in your fucking place in like 2 seconds. Like that kind of stuff is not tolerated. But it's interesting that I noticed that in more like non-South Asian families where kids would act out. And I wondered why that was, how that was allowed. And somehow in our culture that it was not acceptable. It was not acceptable to speak back to your parents. It was not acceptable, you know, to be like moody and demanding. And it's like, that's not going to work, right? That's you're not eating or you're like getting locked up in the basement. Like one of those two things are going to happen or probably both. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I try to understand, Tess, is that why is it acceptable? And B, why is it kind of okay for parents, I see parents do this where they're just like, oh, it's just being a teenager. He's being an asshole. He's just a teenager. When did that become okay? Like, when did that become normal?
No, and I'm with you. I don't think it's okay, but at all. Listen, I have a 13-year-old, so I am just entering into that phase.
Jeez.
And I, you know, and the thing is that while maybe the way in which your parents parented you, I don't know if you have children or not, but like if you, no. So the thing is that, right, that this is the hardest part about being a parent is that each parent has to figure out for themselves how to best parent the child that they have. Mm-hmm. And the problem with the biggest problem with parenting is that you don't know if you're going to be any good at it until you have a kid. And by then you've got the kid. And so much of parenting, it's a broken system, but a big part of parenting is learning as you go and figuring it out and really getting to know your kid, and you're gonna make mistakes. So I think that the thing is, it's not about the extremes. Mm-hmm. My guess would be that the way in which your parents raised you, like you that there are pieces of that that are still, you maybe still hold with you today about, like, you know, the feelings that you have around it that you wish it wasn't like that. And then I'm sure there's parts of it where it helps you, it makes you grittier, it makes you tougher, you get stuff done.
That's right.
And so that's the thing. We all have experiences in our childhood, mm-hmm. in our entire lives where we're like, you know, my parents are divorced. They divorced when I was 6. And it's a little bit like, do I wish my parents were together? Of course I do. You know, is it incredibly painful? Of course it is. And at the same time, I feel like I'm a much more resourceful person. I can roll with the punches a lot more. I can kind of go with the flow and make things work with different kinds of people. And so the thing is that it's each parent's responsibility to work on their own stuff, be the best person they can be, because that's how you're a good parent.
Right.
And really, I had to learn this lesson too, which is you don't parent the child that you want. You parent the child that you have. Mm. You know, you love them and accept them for who they are. Doesn't mean they get to be assholes. But you do allow them to be human.
Right, right. So being an asshole is not allowed, but being a human, it is.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But being an asshole is also being part of being human.
Yes. So, I mean, I think the thing is, if your kid is being a real asshole and you go, oh, yeah, they're just being an asshole, ignore them. That's a little different than, oh, wow, my kid's being a real asshole. I need to intervene and do something about it. Right. That's a very different thing that we see. And really, it's like, it sounds like for you, there was no wiggle room. There was no room to make mistakes. There was no room for any of those things. No. So that's the piece of it, is it's really about figuring out for your kid, like, how do I, you know, what's the balance between the two? And if your kid's acting like an asshole, yes, you that is part of the human condition and it is a human response. And at the same time, they need to learn that this is how you deal with those feelings, and you don't lash out at other people, and you work, you know, that's the goal. It's to learn how to be a person.
Right. You know? Tess, would you say that we have a bigger mental health crisis among adults, and especially among young people, now more than ever before that we've ever had?
Is it that
we're now more aware of it, that these issues have been there all along?
Both. I think, okay. I mean, obviously we've always had these issues. I think that the younger generations are more willing to talk about it. You know, I think it's so funny. My clients all the time will be like, and then I told my friend, my therapist said, and then, right. Like, I'm amazed how much my name comes up in conversation and people say, right. Like, oh, you're talking. Okay.
Right.
Used to be this thing that people did. And I used to have this old, I was in this therapist office for a while where we had two separate doors. There was a door that you came in and a door that you went out. Right. It was that shameful that, God forbid, you run into someone, you know, in the lobby.
Right.
You know? And so, like, oh, you can go out the back. So, yes, it is. We've always needed more mental health help. Right. And at the same time, we are much more now today because of, because young people have made it more acceptable. And, and plus the other thing that's not being talked about is that, you know, the pandemic and everything that's happened, it's really affected young people much more.
Yes.
More Generation Zers and millennials lost jobs than Generation Xers and boomers.
Wow.
You know, a lot more of them, we forget the milestones of life of graduating from college, you know, first time in the working world, all of that having to do that either not getting a graduation ceremony at all, you know, not having these milestones in your life, plus not, plus navigating the workforce, we said earlier, is really, really hard. Imagine doing that all on Zoom.
Right.
And so now they're doing this and there's less jobs and less opportunities and less time, you know, less to meet people. And younger people are usually living on their own alone and having to, like, shut down and shelter in place by yourself or some random roommates and away from your family. I mean, it really has impacted them and it's important. And I think that this is something that has to be addressed because our mental health system and the way it works right now is very much broken. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that, therapy is expensive. It's expensive and it is, hard to find the right person, and finding that right person is difficult. And unfortunately, a lot of people that need help don't get the help because, they either can't afford it, and or it's just, you know, they call around and they try to find someone who's under their insurance and then they give up and they can't. And so they just wait That's it right. out and figure it out on their own. But
right.
the other part of it too is that all these things that I'm talking about today, like the social media has impacted our mental health. The internet has impacted our mental health.
Sure.
Our phones, you know, we really are starting to see what these phones have done.
That's right.
And one thing that I try to explain to people about young adults is, so my first job out of college, I worked 9:30 to 5:30. When 5:30 came, we turned off the lights, we locked the door, and we all went out. And my boss had no way of getting a hold of me unless she called me at home and I was actually at home to pick it up. But what we forget is that that today you get a new job and you're kind of expected to be on all the time.
True.
Right? There is no 9:30 to 5:30. There is no 9 to 5. That you've got bosses emailing you all the time. You've got people pinging you constantly. The number of distractions that we have on a daily basis, the ways in which Slack and Messenger and this thing, right? We have so much coming at us all the time, much more than ever before. And that is affecting us because our, you know, it's all got to do with executive functioning and our prefrontal lobes. Like, we are being overwhelmed by the amount of things that are coming at us all the time. So we forget that, that's impacting us tremendously.
Sure.
And then that makes it, you know, makes it more. And we haven't even talked about this pandemic and the fact that a study I was just, before I got on here with you, I was just looking this up that I guess it's 1 in 3. They did a study, 1 in 3 COVID survivors are showing signs of neurological health disorder.
That's right. I read about that. That's right. I have a friend of mine. His brother has got COVID. Now is like legit having a absolute serious anxiety breakdown as we speak. Like his neuroses have kind of just, he was a pretty anxiety filled person to begin with. And now the way that the COVID has affected his body, it's just really, really bad. I have another friend of mine, he got COVID, survived it. And now he constantly talks about brain fog, constant brain fog. I have a girlfriend of mine I was having dinner with last night. She got COVID like right at the beginning when COVID was just coming out last March. She was in Australia when they were shutting it down and they literally gave them 24 hours to get back into America. 24 hours. So she's like, we get on the plane, we get here. She's like, I'm super sick. My boyfriend's super sick. She's like, we were sick for like 3 weeks. And now she's telling me about how she constantly has memory loss, where she can't remember stuff.
Yeah.
These are pretty legit and pretty serious problems. Yeah. I honestly don't think the scientists and even science has even caught up to how bad COVID really is and its long-term effects, right?
Yeah.
And even the vaccine, like I'm vaccinated now. I don't know. I'm sure you got vaccinated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you're in the mental, you know, you're in the mental health service business, but I feel like there are so many X factors. There are so many unknowns right now about COVID. And who knows? Are we going to need boosters every year, right?
Yeah.
Now they're talking about the B117 COVID strain that's out. That's a big conversation. But yeah, these are a lot of, there's a lot of X factors. I think one of the things that I saw is that young, like kids in like first grade, like kindergarten, even kids who are, you know, I have a girlfriend of mine, her son is autistic, his autism rather. You know, how it's impacting him. Like he is so severely like damaged by this pandemic. So these are actually, you know, very legit concerns. I mean, as far as the pandemic goes, what is one of the key things that you're seeing among millennials and Gen Zers? Are you seeing a lot more anxiety, depression, panic attacks? What are you seeing?
I'm seeing a lot of anxiety. I always said that beforehand, young people were always anxious before. I think that it's funny because when I first started meeting with clients 15 years ago, the two most common things that people come into you for are depression and anxiety, right? There's also substance abuse and some of these other ones, but depression and anxiety are the two biggies. And they're different, but there's some overlap. There's anxiety and depression and anxiety. And it used to be people were depressed. And, you know, all of my clients that I've met with in the last 7 years or so have been anxious. And I do think it's the distractions and all the things that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So this past year, there's been a tremendous amount of anxiety. And I think when the pandemic started, what was so hard was what we were dealing with is we didn't know how long it was going to last. And there's a psychology to that. It's very different. If you know that you're going to go to prison for a year, the psychology of being able to get through that versus you're a prisoner of war and you may get out next week or you may get out never, right? Like the psychology of not knowing how long this was going to be really affected people. That the biggest part about anxiety is that people have fears that are irrational. And so suddenly here's a fear and it's rational, right? Like, you know, that people with anxiety who are worried about sickness and all of that, it's like, yeah, now you got something you can really latch onto and absolutely be right. And so there was the impact of not knowing what the future is, not knowing, having the unknown, the you know, the lack of direction and leadership in terms of like, what are we going to do and how are we going to handle this, and just a lot of the misinformation and everything that was going on. It was incredibly difficult. And so, you know, people are just like, okay, I'll just sit in my house and just wait. And the problem is that the ways in which you treat anxiety and depression, all of those suggestions that I used to give to my clients pre-pandemic, I couldn't give to them anymore, right? A great way to manage your social anxiety is to, right, like find opportunities to socialize. You know, a great way to manage your depression is to, you know, reach out to friends and go see people. So all of the things that people used to do, these things like going and working out, seeing friends, travel, seeing family, like all of these core things that really helped people deal with their anxiety, deal with their depression, were gone. And what you had was, yes, sit in your house and, you know, in the beginning, what was it? Watch Tiger King or whatever it was. And so, right. And then you can see this over time in the evolution of things and, oh, things are opening up. No, they're closing back down. No, they're opening up. Are we going to school? Or are we not going to school? Like the back and forth and back and forth. And then when, you know, and then I think people felt some sort of hope for 2021. There was this idea, light at the end of the tunnel, new president. You know, there was a vaccine. It's a new year. And then what happened at the Capitol? It's like, you know, I think people are just, and a lot of my clients will say to me, oh my God, I don't know what's wrong. Like I haven't done anything this last year, but I'm exhausted. I am more tired and exhausted and fatigued now than we were a year ago.
That's right.
They're exhausted, so tired. And what happens is that, right, we say, oh God, I'm lazy or I'm unproductive or oh, there's something wrong with me. It's like, no, you're exhausted because you have been at a high alert level of anxiety consistently for a year. You know, this is what we see in PTSD, people who go off to war.
That's right.
Right? Like always being on guard. And this is what happens. We go to the store. Are they wearing a mask? You know, like, who's this person? Do I know them? You know, that feeling that we have every single time we walk out of our homes, while even if you're someone who's not that worried about it and you're like, I'm okay, my guess is somewhere inside of you, there's some inkling of anxiety when you go to the grocery store.
Sure.
Right. And there's is someone too close, you know? And so we forget, or we really don't know now the true effects, just like we don't know the physical effects of COVID.
Yeah.
We have no idea what the long-term mental effects are going to be for everything that we've been through this last year.
Sure. I also feel, Tess, like so many people, like I have friends who live with their elderly parents. So even though they're not anxious for themselves, they're anxious for their family members at the daycare. Yes. They're anxious for their kids. They're anxious for, you know, possibly they have a spouse or, you know, a relative that lives with them that had cancer and survived and it has a compromised immune system and they're not vaccinated. And, you know, so there's like all these unknown. I think what you're referring to really is you're talking about certainty versus uncertainty.
Yes.
And I think that's why people are exhausted, because there's so much uncertainty, right? Mm-hmm. Just like you said, like you're constantly on high alert. You're just like, I don't know what's going to happen. In my neighborhood, what has happened during the pandemic and even after some of the marches and stuff is that we've just had a whole lot of crime go up in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Like we have straight up burglaries taking place. We have people's homes being constantly broken into. So it's like, okay, so there's pandemic, there's poverty. People are, you know, now more than ever before, you're talking about, you know, there's a study that they came out with that middle class is now, there's a big chunk of middle class that has plummeted into poverty because people don't have the money. They ate through their savings. They're looking for to do odd jobs, like whatever it takes to, you know, stay afloat. And then you add the, oh my God, I live with a parent who's, you know, cannot get sick. Oh my God, you know, I have a child that can't get sick. Or, you know, oh, I survived cancer and I have a compromised immune system, but I still got to go out and make money and put the food. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just so much stuff. Like, it's funny you said that because I've been doing these live streams since the pandemic hit, because I was like, I'm going to blow my brains out if I don't keep myself active, because I'm a very active person. Mm-hmm. So I live stream 5 days a week. I have all these guests. And was it yesterday? This week, I decided not to do a live stream because I was just last night, I was so burnt out. And I was asking myself, I'm like, why am I so burnt out? And there it is. You just gave me the answer. I'm just like, because I have been going. And my brain is like, no more. My body's like, no more. I can't do this. I can't do this.
Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. You were going to
I was just going to say the other thing that was happening is a lot of people who work, you know, everybody that went to remote work.
Yeah.
What was happening was they were finding that what was happening was people are like, well, I'm home tonight and I'm not doing anything and my computer's right there, so I might as well keep working. You know, people have been working overtime, working and putting in a lot of hours. Some of it is because they have to, they need the money, or their company, you know, they need the help, or they've down, you know, the company had to fire a bunch of people and now you're doing five people's jobs. I found last year around August, people were like, oh, you know, really just, and I just said, have you ever taken a vacation at all during this time? And they're like, well, no, I was waiting to see what would happen. And I didn't take a vacation. I'm like, So that's the other part of it too, is there are people who haven't even taken a week off. They're like, well, I don't really want to sit in my house. I'm like, you have to have at least a week or two of not doing anything.
Mm.
That is the whole point. We are such, and I do blame, I blame Instagram for this and a lot of the social media. We live in this hashtag hustle lifestyle where people are either you're hashtag hustling, I'm killing it, I'm a boss babe, I'm this, I'm that, or I figured out how to work 4 hours a month and I'm a quadrillionaire and look at me, I'm a genius, right? And if you don't fit into one of those two things, you are, you know, somehow you're lazy or you're unproductive. And so this level of productivity, because we can work anywhere at any time, we are struggling to figure out when to work and when not to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that alone is making us fatigued. So you can see the layers upon layers of, we were already with all the distractions, short circuiting our brains, and it was overwhelming us that we had no boundaries about work life and home life. Then the pandemic hit and that really destroyed whatever boundaries that we had. And then let's couple all this with the 90 things that have happened to us, right? Like all the stressors. Right. And then let's not take a vacation at all. Cause I don't, you know,
I think a lot of people feel I'm home already. What vacation am I going to take? Isn't this vacation? I had a guy recently tell me, he was just like, oh yeah. He's like, I did a staycation. I was like, staycation. He goes, oh yeah. I rented, you know, this hotel room in Venice that I've been wanting to go to. And he's like, I just went and spent 3 days there by myself.
Yeah.
Hung out by the pool, just hung out, did my own thing. I'm like, that's a really fun idea, actually.
Yeah.
But Tess, if you're financially struggling where you can't even pay your freaking rent, vacation is the last thing on your freaking mind.
Yes. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Right? So many people have plummeted into poverty during the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I have people who are telling me that, you know, they got fired for like a month and a half and then their company was doing so much business that they came back and rehired all the people they fired. They were like, our orders are through the roof. This is a girlfriend of mine. She works for a sex toy company. She's like, the sales were through the fucking roof. She's like, we are 20% above what we were expecting to make.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because, you know, if you're like in this shipping kind of business, like Amazon and I guess sex toy industry and stuff like that, you're making a killing right now. Because people are like, what am I going to do? Like, well, you know, you're just home, you're ordering stuff at home. But I just feel test like, I mean, it's easy to be like, you should go take a vacation. You should go out. But it's like, well, I can barely put food on the table. Yeah. Where the fuck am I going to take a vacation? And I'm not even vaccinated and neither are my family members, you know?
Yeah, no, that's very real. And so then it becomes, and I understand this, if you're a parent, you'd never have a vacation day. I get that completely. And I do. And what I say to those people is, okay, You know, if it's not feasible for you, then when you get up in the morning, you need to ask yourself, what is it that I need for myself today? What do I need for me? And that's the part that I think, especially women, we struggle with this. We put everybody else's needs above our own. And it's a little bit like if the 10 minutes of stretching, if playing a video game, if like staring at your phone, staring at the wall, watching a stupid show, like if that's what you need, then those are the things that you need to be doing for you. But what it's yes, you're absolutely right. To be able to take a vacation, it is a privilege.
That's right.
And at the same time, you've got to find ways the best that you can to take care of yourself and take care of your mental and emotional health. Right. And it's really about not feeling like you have to be busy all the time and doing. That right. We place a lot of value and priority in the doing. And right. We don't place enough value and importance in the resting.
Mm, right. I feel like just sometimes, even when I rest, I'm still exhausted. I think because I don't even think if it's physical. I think it's emotional and it's mental because I'm just mentally exhausted because I'm just like, oh, my God. I'm mentally exhausted because I have 3 projects right now that I worked my ass off throughout the pandemic to build it. And now they have to be put on hold because all these X factors and all these uncertainties. And it's emotionally draining because I'm just like, does nothing matter? I'm like, all this hard work, is this all in vain? Like, why did I even put in the work? Should I have just hung out and eat fucking Twinkies all day? You know, like, why did even, a friend of mine was just like, no, you know, once everything starts opening up, which it is around the corner, it's literally around the corner. You're like, you're not even going to have the time because you've done all this work. And now everything's just going to be coming through at the same time. I don't know, Tess, is that an accurate
I don't know exactly what the rollout of everything is going to look like. I think all of that's to be revealed, but absolutely. I mean, I think there is nothing in life is a waste. Nothing is pointless. Everything has a significance and importance. And I think that's hard when you're especially, I think the older you get, that it's easier to see it. Mm-hmm. That every job, the crappy jobs, the other jobs, like every job, oh, I learned something from that job. Everything that you do, whatever you've been working on and whatever you're building, you're going to be able to use it. It'll turn into something. Yeah. It will happen. How it all manifests and how it all looks, you don't know. You have no idea. And at the same time, if you have the ability to like give yourself a break and take some time off, right? It's not important to build and do. But at the same time, it's also important to like say, okay, I'm tapped out. I mean, I can imagine for you, especially, you know, the creative energy, all of that. It's you know, you can't just. Come to you.
That's right. I mean, sometimes you're just sitting down and you're like, all right, I really need to do this. But I'm just like, I'm exhausted. Like, I want to do this. So I'll just be like, all right, let me go take a walk, you know. Or let me do some workout, or let me put some music and just like dance around the house and just to make myself feel good, like get some endorphins going, right? Endorphins is what gives the happiness. But I feel like now we're in this place where there is still so much uncertainty when it comes to, you know, work and, oh my God, how is this going to play out? Is stuff going to open back up? Especially for someone like myself. I'm a touring stand-up comic. All my touring had been canceled. I mean, I lost 95% of my income test. That's a big number, big chunk of money to just lose. You're just like, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I hope my kidneys are still good. I can still sell a kidney to survive off of, like, because this is ridiculous right now. But I personally know I have a lot of comic friends that have just quit the business. They just quit it. They were like, well, I won't be able to sustain myself. Like, I now have to go back to school, go get a regular job. Or, you know, so many people have left Los Angeles. So many people left New York City to go back to the towns that they came from because they have to go live with their parents because they can't afford it, you know, because that's a real thing. Tess, do you I want to talk about this because this is a topic that's happening. 2 days ago, a friend of mine made this post. It really killed me about a young woman who went to the top of the building that my friend had managed for 16 years. And she committed suicide. She jumped off the building and killed herself. Young woman, right? How high has been the suicide rate among young people, among millennials and Gen Zers during the pandemic?
I don't have the exact statistics, but they are showing that it is hitting them harder, that they are having more mental health issues. Prior to the pandemic, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield had put out a report, I want to say in 2018, 2019, talking about how high the depression rates were with young people and millennials. Like, it was very alarming at that time. And so it is, it's, you know, I've seen different stats here and there, but it is, it's incredibly difficult because, you know, the other part that I didn't mention about young people is that, you know, the older, I always say, like, the older I get, the, you know, there's parts of it I don't love like the wrinkles and the, and like the aching knees and all that. But I do, I've had enough life experience to know that I'll figure it out. I'll get through it. But can you imagine if you're 22, 23, and this is it? This is what you graduate college into, you know, this is life. And you're already depressed and you're already struggling and, you know, you don't have the family support. You don't have the financial support. Like, it, you know, that's the piece that older people don't recognize that, that, you know, we just have the life experience to be like, okay, this is hard, we'll get through it. And there are a tremendous amount of young people who feel really disillusioned by, like, what's the point? What was the point of me working so hard in school? What was the point of doing all this if I'm entering into a job market where I can't even get a job?
Right. Right. You know, you're right. I mean, I really didn't even factor that.
Yeah. Sorry.
Right. You're right. I mean, I really didn't even factor that. I just feel like, you know, I'm always very curious about this. I think because I've had my footing in two different worlds, right? Growing up, like I mentioned, growing up in Pakistan and then being here. What fascinates me is that, you know, there's a lot of poverty in Pakistan. We are one of the fortunate families where our family was more middle class. We went to private schools. You know, we had access to that. But it's interesting that I see a lot of depression, anxiety, suicide among young people in America. But we don't have the same thing in Pakistan, even though people are much poorer, much less privileged, much less access to great things. And they don't go and they don't have depression. They don't have, I'm sure they do, but there's not this level of suicide. There's not this level of, you know, so perhaps mental health crisis, perhaps in a way that I see it in America. What is that about, Todd?
Well, I would say, I think a lot of it's about expectations, right? What you're taught and what you're told growing up. Because that was the big issue for a lot of millennials, where they were told by their parents, you know, work hard in school and get into a good college. And okay, get into a good college. And if you work hard in college and do all these internships, you'll get a good job and you'll be happy.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were told, they were told that happiness was a guarantee. That if you do X, Y, and Z, then you will be happy. And what happened was they went out into the world and they're like, oh, wait, I hate my job and I'm not happy. I did everything I was supposed to do. What's wrong, right? That's where that comes in. I think that you know, it's interesting because I've talked about younger generations and I'm in front of audiences of all ages. And this one woman who was, I want to say she was in her late 60s at the time, she said, you know, no one guaranteed me happiness. My parents told me, you know, go out there and work hard, bye. And I do. I think that the expectations of what the pressures that we've put on kids, the expectations that we've put on kids, and how we've told them what life is all about, it's very, you know, it's very high. So if you're told, you know, life is going to be difficult, it's going to be stressful, it's, you're going to have some good moments, but for the most part, you're going to work hard, then, you know, you know what to expect. The biggest thing that I see, especially, is in terms of career stuff, right? The problem with social media is there are these TikTok stars that, you know, just do a little dance and they've gone viral. It's so simple. We have no idea if they're going to be able to sustain this, right? We don't know what
the long term. That's right.
You and I know to build a career, it takes years.
That's right.
You know, I always tell my clients, it takes a long time to first figure out who you are and what you want and what you really want to do.
That's right.
What it is that you want to do. And then once you figure out what you want to do, then you have to spend another decade getting really doing two things, getting really good at what you do and honing in on specifically what you want to do. Right. And then you then start to feel kind of confident in what you're doing. And then you can really start building upon that and doing that. But that's like 20 years. I mean, I'll tell my clients, like, it's only been, despite doing this for over 15 years and having another career before that and all that, I think probably in the last three, four years, I finally felt like maybe I can do this therapy thing, you know? I mean, because it takes a long time to get good at something.
That's right.
It takes a long time. And so we have this, there's a lot of false expectations and false beliefs about what it means to build a career. Before I became a therapist, I worked in entertainment. I lived in LA and I worked in the entertainment business. And
what did you do, Tess?
I worked at a talent agency. I was an assistant at like a mid-sized talent agency. And then I went and worked for a talent manager. And then, you know, she promoted me and became like a junior talent manager. And then I was like, I had my own quarter life crisis and I was gone. Right. So, but I remember being there and we would have these actors that were like exploding and people like, oh my God, they're an overnight sensation. I'm like, I know this person has been working for 10 years.
That's right.
Right. Like all these overnight sensations. It's like, no, they have been grinding it out.
That's
for
right.
Decades.
That's correct.
To get to that point.
That's correct.
So that is not what we talk about. That is we spend. And so that's the problem is that if you're growing up and you're told, if you do this, this, and this, you will be guaranteed happiness. And here's Instagram. And let me show you all these things. Of course, life is going to be disappointing. Of course it is. You know, it's never going to live up to what you thought it was going to be.
That's right. That's right. And I think so much of it also is like how many likes did you get for your picture or your post?
Oh, yeah.
Your like self-esteem and your happiness depends on how many people like your shit. And I've been guilty of it where I have to catch myself and I'm like, you got to be shitting me right now. Like there's the performer's Mona and then there's the reasonable Mona. It's like, okay, what is going on here? Like my self-worth does not depend on how many likes I have. Like for instance, that's like as stand-up comics, right? We put our shows out there. We're like, hey, I'm going to be at this place at this time. This is the shows I'm doing. And I had a comedian who made a post about her appearance on my show because I'm a producer and I produce a lot of shows. She had over 500 likes on her post. You know how many people came to see her, Tess?
Really?
Zero. Mm-hmm. Zero. I can get 50 likes and I'll pack a room out of 300.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean even?
Yeah. You
know? And I think what really like that's the first time when my ears were like, oh, hey, what? Like I can get fucking 50 likes on this and I can pack rooms out and this girl's getting 500 likes and nobody comes to see her. Which also told me, of course, we all know that social media is pretty freaking shallow. But I think that also is like such a great perspective on how detached it is from reality. Right.
Yeah.
Somebody who wouldn't go to her show would watch, be like, oh my God, she must have a big fan base. Look at the 500 people. Well, nobody fucking came to see her. So who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. Right? How easy it is to just click like. But it is an effort to take a shower, get dressed, buy the ticket, spend your money, find parking, show up to go see a show, right? Enjoy it or not enjoy it because the person sucked, right? Mm-hmm. Eat the food, pay the bill, and then drive back home. That's a lot more effort than clicking with just a like.
Yeah. 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 I mean, there's this real disconnect between, right. We associate likes with being good. And I see this a lot because I do a lot of coaching as well. And when I sort of moved into the coaching realm and started meeting other coaches, it was really interesting to meet them. And, you know, the way in which their social media was and the talking about like, oh, I launched this program and it was this and this and this. And then you really get into the numbers with them and you're like, wait a second. Oh, I earn three times what you earn. Mm-hmm. Like I have 10 more years of experience than you. And like, oh, wait a second. Like, are your clients getting results? You know, and that's the part that is really true, which is, you know, that's the part that we don't think about so much, which is it is we've spent so much time equating likes and followers to, you know, this makes you important and popular. It's the same thing that we do with money, right? And salaries.
Right.
You know, this person's better because they make $10,000 more than this other person. And it's the same thing. We're doing that to people and equating that with like, oh, they must not be very good at what they do because they don't have all these other things. And it's like, no, that's just marketing. That's right. Just good. That's just right. good marketing and posting right. the right things and all of that. Like, that's got nothing to do with anything.
I was looking at a post of a very big celebrity that had like 35 million followers, right? So when I looked at their post, how many likes they had? And they had a wild 2 million likes, right? So for us who don't have 35 million followers, we're like, oh my God, 2 million likes. That's a lot of likes. But if you put it in perspective, for somebody with 35 million followers to only have 2 million likes, that's a pretty fucking big disconnect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? But because we don't have 35 million followers, we look at it, we're like, oh my God, 2 million. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Not really. If you look at, if you give perspective, right? If you look at it, it's like 35 million to 2 million, that's not a lot of likes, actually. And I think so much of it is now people, especially I feel like a lot of young people, like millennials and Gen Zers, and even younger folks are going to base their self-esteem on likes. And I think it's so fucked up, quite frankly.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. I mean, and that's why I am so grateful I did not have social media when I was young, right? I mean, I don't know how young people do it now. I don't know how they, and I understand why a lot of them have private accounts and why they sort of like, I'm only going to post to these couple people and all of that. I think the constant daily, this reminder of how much, you know, how much do you love me? How much do you care about me? You know, it's utterly exhausting, and everything, life becomes performative. You know, we're all performing for each other. We're all curating for each other. We're all, you know, doing all these things. And we're not, listen, I'm on social media. I have someone who helps me with it because I'm not really great with it. But
right, because it's not your specialty. Your specialty is being a psychotherapist and a coach.
And so the thing is that but what I think we're all really missing out on is, you know, be here now, being here in the present moment, like just being here, like watch the sunset. You don't have to take a photo of it and post it to prove that it happened. Right. Like be in the moment. And that's one of the things when clients come to me where they're feeling low or down about their lives or what's going on, I always get them to go on some sort of social media break. Like you need to take some time off, or you get to set the timer for 20 minutes. And when that 20 minutes is up, you get off and you're done. You're not going to miss anything. Mm-hmm. And every single time they'll tell me, I am so glad I did that. Not once did someone say to me, oh my God, I missed everything. It was horrible. Like every single time they're like, oh yeah, I had a lot more time and I felt a lot better. And yeah, I realized like 20 minutes is kind of enough and I don't need to do that. Because we consume it so much in between like breaks of time, you know, that's again, the issues that we have with distraction. It's these things that we have, but we're doing it to ourselves. Like we can't even possibly sit and wait in line anymore and just stare off into space. Like we have to be on our phones.
That's right.
We always have to be doing something.
That's right. Tess, I wonder, I think there was some study that came out that phones, like radiation from phones or like waves from phones are even like this whole talk of 5G is gonna eventually give people brain cancer. I mean, have you heard of this?
I mean people have been talking about the phones and brain cancer for a long time. I feel like that's been a talk with the cordless phones, right? Like there was a whole thing with the cordless. I remember that. Remember cordless phones? And all of that, but I don't know. I've heard different things about that. The one thing that I've heard is I think that, right, people are talking about phones and bringing your phone out at like dinner and texting will become like the new smoking. You know, it'll be this thing that, you know, people will watch movies and go, oh my God, they're all on their phones.
That's right.
None of them are smoking, but they're all on their phones. That it is. It's as addictive.
To me, it's really sad when I see two people on a date and they're like looking down at their phones. I'm like, oh my God. I was in Santa Monica last Sunday and I just wanted to take a chill pill. I want to go sit by the ocean. I wanted to look out at the ocean. I just sit there. I close my eyes. I give gratitude. I have like my like little mantra things that I do to center myself. And I look over at this couple and they're sitting next to each other. Beautiful view. Oh, it broke my heart. I was like, oh my God, you're so blessed. Look up, look at what you have. Like, people around the country would like kill to have this access that you have. But I think that's just where we live now. This is like our new reality until they start making those freaking glasses that Google's making where everything's going to be in your eye. That, you know, remember when Bluetooth came out? And people are like, yeah, but I told him. And you look around, you're like, are you talking to me? It's like, what are you on the phone? Oh, okay, this is weird, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of getting to that. Tess, we're going to start wrapping up. I want to ask you, I don't know, maybe top five things that you, one of the things you already mentioned, which is take 20 minutes to, right? 20 minutes, do your social media, and then just leave it alone, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are, I guess you can say, top three things or even top five things that people can do during the pandemic to kind of keep their sanity, or if they're feeling depressed, you know, or feeling exhausted, to kind of get themselves back on track?
Yeah. So I would also do the thing of, I would on look at the week ahead. The one good thing about the pandemic, if you are working from home, is you don't have to work 9 to 5. Like, you have this full day ahead. So really think about how you want to spend that time. That if you're a morning person and you want to have a morning ritual and get up, like, awesome. You don't have this commute anymore. Go and do this. Don't just roll out of bed and start work. Like, have a little bit of a morning time. And then if you get a lull and 2 o'clock and you want to take a break, then go take a break. I think that people get very, what they do is they roll out of bed and then they start their work day and then they just work and work and work and work until they collapse. So be more thoughtful. And I'm suggesting to people, like, on a Sunday, look at your week ahead and really figure out, like, I'm going to do this here and this, and I have these meetings and I'm going to put this here. And then each day, find, like, what is the thing that you're going to do for you? What is your thing that's going to help you recharge and refresh and feel good about you? And it can be whatever you want it to be. It doesn't have to be a bubble bath or all those kind of self-care things that people think about. I would also say that, so having that time, if you can swing, taking time off, having a mental health day, taking advantage of what lots of companies are offering, 2 weeks of COVID leave, like, take advantage of that if you can, because you need it. We are beyond exhausted. And, you know, find other ways to, I think the big thing that people have been missing is connection. And it's hard, the Zoom connection. And I know it's hard if you're living far away from your family, but, you know, I would try to find unique and different ways to remain connected with the people in your life that you really love and care about. It doesn't have to be a Zoom thing. It doesn't have to be a phone call. It can be like, we're going to watch a show together. You know, you watch it at this and I'll watch it at this. And then let's all, you know, we'll email each other our notes, or we'll call each other with our notes. Just find creative ways to bond with the people in your life, for sure. And I mean, you know, if you feel unsure about how you're doing and all of that, like, go seek help. I mean, I know that there's a bit of a bear. I know that sometimes money can be a barrier. Some of it's, like finding the right person, but there are a lot of community mental health centers out there where they have people available. So don't, just because if you run into a brick wall, just keep going, like keep trying to find the help that you need.
What is a resource where people can go and seek kind of, you know, mental health help if they don't have a lot of money or they don't have health insurance? Do you have any hotlines?
I mean, I don't have any hotlines. I mean, if you go to the National Association of Mental Illness, NAMI, NAMI, that's a good resource, and they will always point you in the right direction of where to go.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's county should have every county has a suicide hotline. And I actually very early in my, when I was in graduate school, I worked at a suicide hotline. And a lot of people think that you have to be suicidal to call. The majority of the people that called us were not suicidal. They were truly people who wanted someone to talk to, that could calm them down and help them. And so you don't have to be actively suicidal to call a suicide hotline. You can call, you can tell them how you're feeling. They will point you in the right direction of resources and which way to go. And don't be, you know, I know it's hard, but don't be ashamed to talk to somebody. And because I think you'll be surprised if you turn to the person next to you, your neighbor, your family, whatever, and say, I'm struggling. They might be able to say to you, oh, I went here. This really helped me. Or I did this. There's also so much, you know, this is the flip side of the internet, is there are a lot of these places like BetterHelp. And I'm forgetting the name of the other one, but they're much more cost effective. They do like 30-minute sessions. It's far less expensive than going to a private therapist. There's those options. And there is also, and I think even if you go to some of those places, they can even point you in the right direction. You know, they're there to help. So if that service doesn't work for you, you just have to ask.
That's right. Tess, what about you? If people want to contact you, hire your services, where can they go?
You could go to my Instagram. It's Tess Brigham. But the best thing to do is go to my website, tessbrigham.com, and you can learn about me and how to hire me. And I have, I do one-on-one work. And if you're a company and want me to come in and talk about mental health to your employees, because everyone's struggling, I am happy to do that. And I have programs and products. And then I also have blogs, and I have a YouTube channel myself, Tess Brigham.
Oh, great.
And so, you know, there is, I release a new video every week, which I think just like you, it's like, I want to say things. I want to, you know, talk to people, and no one's here. So, and I talk a lot about the stuff I've been talking about today. I give you like very actionable tips on so many things, and it's all there on YouTube free.
Awesome. Tess, this has been such a great conversation. Yes, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Oh, you're welcome. It has been great getting to know you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Same here. Okay. Well, we'll bring you back on again soon.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks, you.
Tess. Take care.
Bye.
That was a lovely Tess Brigham. My God, I learned so much. I think sometimes we get so caught up in our own pain and our own struggles that we forget that there are people who are not the same age as you and who are younger than you or even older than you and have a different kind of struggle. So special thanks to Tess Brigham for bringing that to my awareness and to everyone else's awareness. You guys, I will be back tomorrow with a brand new guest. If you have not subscribed to my YouTube channel, please do. I am getting so close to getting it monetized. It really would mean the world to me. You can go to youtube.com/Mona Shake Comedian. I'm with the same name on TikTok, same name on Facebook, and of course on Instagram and Twitter @Mona's Comedy. Guys, have a good evening. Stay safe out there. I will see you tomorrow.